This is TWiT.
Stanford, this is the headline from Stanford press release, stanford.edu. Stanford researchers identify four causes for Zoom fatigue, and then they offer simple fixes. It's not just already Lisa's laughing. It's not just Zoom. Popular video chat platforms have design flaws that exhaust the human mind and body, but there are easy ways to mitigate the effects. Here are the four reasons. Too much close-up eye contact. It's overly intimate because the size of the face on the screens is abnormally large, and on Zoom calls, everyone's looking at everyone all the time. There's just too much eye contact. So they're quoting in this report a journal, Technology, Mind, and Behavior. It's the first peer-reviewed article that systematically deconstructs Zoom fatigue by Professor Jeremy Balinson. And Balinson says the fix for this is take Zoom off the full screen option, reduce the size of the Zoom window. I always watch it in a grid mode. I don't know what's wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Relative to the monitor, minimize face size. And use an external keyboard to allow an increase in the personal space bubble. I'm going to move back. Let me increase the space bubble between myself and the grid. Number two, seeing yourself during video chats constantly in real time is fatiguing. And, of course, the fix for that is just hide your own view. Third, video chats dramatically reduce our usual mobility. That's true. When I'm on the phone, a lot of times I will walk around. I find myself, I look up and suddenly I'm outdoors. I don't know how that happened. So I don't know what the fix is except to move the camera farther away so that you can move around. Maybe he says pace and doodle. And finally, the cognitive load is much higher in video chats. During long stretch of meetings, give yourself an audio-only break. Turn off your camera so you don't have to you don't have to be non-verbally active. That is true. I've seen I saw a TikTok where a woman was on a Zoom meeting, very lively and stuff. As soon as she closed it, it was like, oh, I'm so done. What's wrong with this, Alex?
Well, I mean, I think that fundamentally, and to be fair to the researcher, is that he does say in there that this is theoretical. Like he doesn't, this isn't like they did a bunch of research. I mean, they didn't do the right research at a full level. Most of this isn't peer reviewed. This is a bunch of ideas.
He designed what he calls the ZEF scale, the Zoom exhaustion and fatigue scale.
Right. Well, and you look at, when you want to talk about bias confirmation, this is like a textbook of bias confirmation.
Yeah. How much do you hate your Zoom meetings?
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's all
fill
like,
out if, this if you questionnaire. Yeah.
It's just insane. Anyway, so the problem really is that, so we, some of my background is we've done, in the last decade, we've done over 2,000 events, you know, over 1,000 of them for Google doing Hangouts in the early days.
Almost all video, right?
All video. No, all we've done is, not, I mean, I've done a lot of other things. We streamed, you know, I/O and Facebook, F8 and stuff like that. But the vast majority of the work that I work on is only using online tools, whether it's Skype or Zoom or Hangouts before that and all of these other things, is using these tools to allow people to build these meetings that occur all over the world. They're global, what we call centerless events. They don't have any, there's nobody anywhere. You know, the speakers are somewhere in the world.
I think that's
part of
the
somewhere in the world. And
is this kind of,
well,
decoupled from the earth feeling?
Well, we look at it as not being constrained by time and space.
That's another way to say it. Yeah.
You know, like, so,
amazing
so
way of putting framing, it. Framing is a very powerful device.
I mean, figuring out how well, to but it. I mean, the, you know, as someone who's worked on virtual events and physical events for the last two decades, physical events are really exhausting.
I'm starting to love these virtual events. Yeah. I mean, yeah, just to ask, do a questionnaire after CES. Well, talk about fatigue.
Yeah, exactly.
That's well, exhausting.
And the thing is that we've prepped over 6,000 participants. And I mean that means that those are the people that are actually talking, interacting with each other. And so a lot of the stuff that they're talking about in here is kind of absurd. And so from someone who actually does it, not someone who has a bunch of good ideas based on things that they thought. And so, you know, I know they have a great,
I'm sorry, Dr. Balinson. I'm sorry.
I know they have a strong, I know they have a pretty, diploma, but the thing is that there's actual field, you know, field work that's actually useful. And yes. So from the field work, the biggest thing is solving a bunch of, there are etiquette issues of how you manage a room and so on and so forth. But the primary things that change the comfort of Zoom, the Zoom experience, is your technical setup. So if people in the room improve their audio first, just don't sound bad, don't sound echoey, don't sound far away. And that's like a $30 fix. There's like $30 mics that you want on. It's like 80% of it will just get fixed. Then internet, like Wi-Fi is the devil, like for this kind of thing. Wi-Fi was not built for this. So as you know, the first thing you do when you get somebody on is like, let's get them off of Wi-Fi. Do you have an Ethernet? And we when we're prepping people, we're like, hey, how far away is your router? And they're like, oh, it's 75 feet. And we're like, okay, we'll send you a cable. You know, and so because Wi-Fi affects it, then after that, lighting and then video and then their environment. And when you start to fix those things, and most of those are not particularly complex fixes. They can be. I mean, my fix is complex. But for the small kits that we send out, the thing, and we send out probably 50 to 60 kits a week. I'm sorry, a month. 50, 60 kits a month. They're relatively small fixes. And what happens is suddenly people, you know, they look good. People get tired of looking at themselves because it's like their worst self. It's down below them, looking up their nose with bad lighting. Of course, you don't want to look at that all day. But when you're well lit, like I probably look two or three times better on Zoom than I do in real life. You know, so I don't, you know, like when you're set up that way, you know, you don't necessarily want to give that up. You know, so I think that's the, you know, so that's
if you're
the issue.
In other words, if you're going to decouple yourself from space and time, you might as well look good while you're doing it.
Well, but again, what happens is that you get a lot more comfortable with it. You get, you know, you have good audio, you have good video, and you actually have better audio and video.
The fatigue comes from the low quality of the signal.
Well, I mean, I'm going to say that there is that, but I think there's an element of Zoom fatigue that the article has really kind of missed in its, you know, it's looking at, you know, it's great to look at the quality, and I agree with everything Alex said. Like, my life improved drastically when I got a camera that I could look straight into rather than a web camera that was, you know, attached
which
to my
by the way, is exactly what they tell you not to do. You don't want to have the eye to eye contact.
No eye contact.
You want to avoid.
Yeah.
And I'm spent thousands of dollars on making sure that you can do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the problem that I found with Zoom fatigue, which this article completely misses, which is again, to Alex's point, the danger of doing things theoretically rather than practically, is that in a world where video is kind of your only form of communication, then every problem is fixed with a video meeting. And the problem is that we have become completely subservient to this idea that every single interaction we need to have ends up being a Zoom meeting. And from working in an office, when you get to talk to your coworkers, you know, you have an interaction that is walking past each other in the corridor, and you have an interaction that's like overhearing somebody and then yelling at them across the room and asking what's going on.
Yeah.
There's this huge variety, but when all you've got is like a Zoom call, then suddenly everything that you do becomes
a
Zoom
point.
Call.
Yeah.
And so you completely lack any variety. And so I will find that, you know, in an average day in the office, I might have a chat with someone sat next to me, a yell with someone across the room, stand and work something out over by the coffee machine, you know, and lunch with somebody. Whereas when I'm sat, you know, in pandemic times with Zoom fatigue, it's like I've got a 30-minute meeting with this person on Zoom, followed by a 20-minute meeting with this person on Zoom, followed by a one-hour meeting with this person on Zoom. And it's like every, you know, when all you've got is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Yeah. And I think that, for me, has definitely been the real kind of Zoom fatigue issue.
I think Will brings up a good point, however inadvertently, because when you start talking about Zoom, there's a cognitive load that goes along with having to schedule all of your interactions or having to set up the Zoom meeting and then go through the kabuki ritual of, is your camera on? Are you mute? Are you not mute? Whereas when you have spontaneous interactions with a coworker in an office, you don't have to do that amount of work just to have a conversation with them.
Of course,
and,
for me,
yeah.
Go ahead.
That's part of it too, is when you're in an office, like you said, there's a lot more shouting across when somebody's working or not working. It's a little bit more interstitial. You don't have the work associated with we've now gotten to a point to having a conversation, and then there's more work paid to that conversation too. Microsoft Research released some preliminary findings last summer. This was in their research lab, where they found out that people's attention span in Microsoft Teams meetings tended to flag at about the 35-minute mark. And they had done brain scans and other things to figure out why this was the case. And they said it's cognitive overload, because even when you have people on grids, you're still habituated to looking for signals like eye contact or who's talking. And the research has been foundational to some of the ways they've zhushed up the team's experience since. But I've thought a whole lot about how over the past 6 months, Microsoft's been paying a lot of attention to the cognitive load that goes along with video meetings and what are the tech steps to change that, versus some of the things I found when I interviewed people who are like, the answer is to make your meeting shorter and then to get up and move around and do things between those meetings so that you don't feel as if you're just a pair of eyes staring at a screen for 10 hours a day every day.
Speaking of somebody who's been doing this for 15 years. You get used to it.
The other thing is that...
Like, do you cross-train for it?
I think that the...
Yeah, I have been.
I mean, I think that from... Number one is that I prefer everyone to schedule stuff. If you don't know me, like if you check, call my phone, it basically tells you need to email or text me, or I'm not going to pick up the phone. You know, like I don't want that.
You and I are preternaturally suited for this environment.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's as if we were born with Zoom gills.
Yeah.
Not everybody is.
But the thing is that, so for instance, there's a lot of, we did a bunch of eye tracking research, and this
was. Oh, did you? Wow. Before.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is a decade ago. So we were looking at training and when people start paying attention, and these are in these very early WebEx and so on and so forth. And one of the things that we found is that if you talk straight for 6.5 minutes, it's about 6.5 minutes, people stop paying attention.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah.
They don't leave. They just start looking around.
They zone out. You start sounding like
the
teacher in a Peanuts cartoon.
It gets better. If you put up a slide, it's 60 to 90 seconds.
Yikes.
They stop paying attention. And so we learned very quickly to get rid of the slides because they were just destroying people's view time. You're getting put into passive mode almost immediately. The thing is that one of the things is it's a matter of how people are engaged. So one of the things that I have a meeting every morning, 7 days a week. That lasts anywhere from 2 to 5 hours.
Is this office hours or is this another meeting?
No, it's office hours. So office hours. There's 200 to 300 people that show up for at least 2 hours. I mean, our average view time is 82 minutes. The energy at the end of the meeting is generally as high or higher than the beginning of the meeting. After 2 hours, the official meeting. And then there's 2 hours before that, that's the unofficial meeting. And 1 hour after that, that's another unofficial meeting where people keep talking. When I hear the whole 35-minute thing, it's cute, but it's like we do this for a long period of time and we do it every single day and people are engaged.
Your experience yesterday,
we did 8 hours, 8 hours straight.
You're just nuts.
10-minute breaks.
You're just nuts. But your experience is a little different too, because from your point of view, you're doing a show, aren't you? Don't you feel like you're doing a show, like you're hosting, I'm doing a show right now, right?
Right, but it's a
discussion. That's a different experience. Different experience than sitting in a Zoom meeting, which is absolutely draining.
Well, it's how you structure that Zoom meeting. You know, so one of the things we do is we do almost no. There's almost no lecturing. There's no long talking. There's no presentations. We deliver that ahead of time. You get that ahead of time. And then we discuss it. So everything's about discussion.
Right.
That's what engages
people. I think it's what you're doing is significantly different though than the Zoom calls that most people have, calls they have, which are boring.
Let me tell you the absolute worst Zoom experience, Leo, is having done this, as I think probably possibly the only person here who might experience this, is Zoom dating.
Oh, don't do Zoom dating. Really? You've done Zoom dating?
I tell you what, never has that 40-minute limit on free Zoom connections been more useful than the, it looks like our call is about to end.
Oh, my God.
It was lovely to meet you.
Wait a minute. Explain this to me.
That sounds great, actually.
Yeah.
Because you have a built-in exit.
It's like those speed dating or a coffee date, which is really designed to kind of, let's see if this is going to even be close. But so tell me how this works. How do you meet the person you're going to Zoom date?
So you use a sort of traditional, one of the more, oh my God, I can't believe this is my life. You can use one of the more traditional dating apps where you're like liking people and looking at their interests and that kind of thing. And you have a little bit of
a chat. So then you say meet up on Zoom.
And then there's usually and then it's like, do you want to like have a Zoom drink or a Zoom coffee?
Is this pretty common?
Yeah.
This is how people do it now.
It is, unfortunately, the way we have been reduced. Yeah.
I feel like Jane Goodall watching The Apes. I'm trying to understand your culture.
I mean, it is. As you know, as single people during the pandemic, you're A, looking for anybody to talk to that isn't a coworker or a member of your family. But the, you know, it definitely gets weird when you're, you know, the Zoom fatigue gets really weird when you are trying to, you know, the whole thing about, you know, having a date is like make eye contact, look at the other person.
Ugh.
But then you look like an absolute creepazoid if you're just doing that the whole time on Zoom.
It takes all the worst elements of a first date
and amplifies all the worst bits and takes away
boils it down.
There's no body language. You can't, you know, get a sense of anybody's kind of like, zen. It's all the worst bits combined together. So that is the absolute Zoom worst. So, Alex, until you fix that for me, I'm afraid I'm still going
to
be.
I haven't had to date for a long time. Yeah. So it's not a concern.
Lisa, Alex, and I are just watching.
Can you set up some sort of, you know, super Zoom room for really high quality dating connections?
Well, both, I mean, I think that
first thing is it times out in 10 minutes. That's the first thing we do.
I mean, on the other side of it, you know, one of the things that makes our discussion so interesting, though, is that, you know, we have basically, we represent 5 or 6 continents every day. It's 25 people basically talking with or in front of 200 to 300 people. And it's a meeting that could not happen in the physical world. Like, it's impossible, like, to have it. And that's what's coming. It's not that physical is going to go away. It's just that telling people to do things like turn off your camera. Look, we can decide whether that's good or bad, but it's kind of, when you turn off your camera in the middle of a meeting, it's kind of a slap in the face for everybody else. And whether you mean it that way or not, that's how it occurs, you know? And so the thing is that telling people to do things that, of course, is better for their personal space and all that other stuff, but you do have to pay attention to how
there's a culture.
There's a culture that you're telling people to go against that isn't going to change. Like, that culture is not going to adjust itself. It's not going to just be okay.
You know,
ask if this is a generational thing, because I've noticed just from a lot of firsthand observation that the young people, children and teenagers have a very different relationship to Zoom physical representation and avatars. And I would argue that schoolwork is the same as going to an office for us. It's someplace where they're expected to be and to turn in a high level of performance every day. But these social expectations and the conventions seem to be very different. And it's been really interesting seeing how few of them will pop on camera unless they're absolutely required to.
What grade is your daughter in?
She's in 4th, and my nephews are 10th and 12th.
It's got to be really hard for
a
grade schooler to do Zoom.
Oh, Lord, Zoom fatigue is real in this house.
But I have to say, my 18-year-old, who's a high school senior, Petaluma has announced that they're going to be able to go back into the classroom in a limited fashion next month. It doesn't want to do it. He said, what's the point? I'm graduating in May. What do I need to go to a class in April for?
Yeah.
So I've he's got completely some, comfortable. I mean, this is, for some reason, he doesn't.
Yeah.
I think so a different...
I'm just wondering what the relationship might be like for those of us who came of age in an in-person professional environment versus people who have already shifted the bulk of their socializing to a computer-mediated environment, if maybe that will affect their biases towards or against cameras.
So I think the thing, Alex, is that there are those of us, and I shouldn't include myself, but there are people who are doing this because they have to because of COVID, and they can't wait till it's over. School kids, people who are working from home. And then there's people like you and me, Alex, who do this for a living.
Well,
and for us, this is just broadcasting. This is our way of life. And so it's a very different experience. I think there are a lot of people who say, well, of course, now I have to say I'm looking at Dr. Bailenson's survey. Yeah. And the questions are things like, how much do you dread having to do things after video conferencing? How often do you feel like doing
confirmation
nothing?
Confirmation bias.
Yeah, talk about it. How much do you need time by yourself after video conferencing? I mean, it's a little...
I mean, it's again, a textbook of confirmation bias, to go down that path.
But I do think that people who don't do this for a living, or who are... I mean, we have other reasons that make this palatable for us. But I think for kids and for people who have to go to meetings and just don't want to, or they want to be in the office, this is Zoom is inextricably allied with the pandemic.
Well, but I think that also, I think that there is, it's kind of like everybody got pushed out into the ski slopes and there's a bunch of people that aren't good at skiing and they're like, well, this stinks. This is horrible. It's cold.
That's a good point.
And I'm kind of like, you know, if you get some lessons and you wear some good clothes, it's actually pretty fun. You know, skiing is not that bad. And they're like, well, but I'm cold and I'm wet and I keep on falling down and I've got a headache and I'm tired. And, you know, and of course it is when you don't have the good tools and you don't understand how to use it, everything's hard and nothing's fun, you know, and it's not, and I think that we're very good at it because we've done it for a long time and I, you know, my job is, but what we see every day when we send kits out is people go, oh, I've already done this. I know how to do this. They put the light, they turn the lights on that we send them and they take the mic and they have the good, you know, they have a good camera and they're like, oh, wow, I look pretty good.
They're happier.
And then there's the, hey, do I get to keep this kit? You're like, there's all, and then there's calls. Like we had a friend of mine had they do the same, they do events and they come in on A7Ss, like these really nice cameras.
Sony DSLRs.
And they look like they make me look very bad. They look like
actually, I stopped doing that. So I have a very good camera that I can send video, and it looks too good. It's moody. It's dark. It looks like a movie. And so I stopped using it. I went back to the camera on the computer because there's a weird disconnect. It's like you don't fit in with the Zoom meeting. You're like some,
but it's like
wearing a three-piece suit to a Twitter panel.
Well, it is, but it's also it's also like
being that.
As a guy, it's like being a 6'2" model, you know, from Sweden. You know, you just walk in.
Everyone's naturally better looking.
You know, some of them get to be born with that, but we do it with cameras and lights and Zoom. You know, and so the thing is that. But anyway, they were talking to an executive. Executive was like, I have to have that, and then they're getting them for all their C-suite because they're like, what people are learning very quickly is whether you like it or not, and whether it's fair or not. What you look like how you sound on Zoom gives you perceived authority that meeting.
If you're the boss,
And even if you're not the boss.
Do you make them wear makeup? Looking. Do you have them put on makeup?
No. Well, for the high-end kits that we send out Mattify. But that's, you know, so we
so there's no shine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. So it's an anti-shine. Those are the big kits, though. Those are the kits that we send out that are like 6K cameras. You know, those are the little ones. We don't do that.
Yeah.